This is NBC News. The Gold Rush, what it means to you. This is Merrill Muller, NBC News. There is a gold rush on, but today's 49er does not labor in the placer fields of California. The mother lode of 1968 is not in the United States at all. It is in Europe, and the miner of today is dressed in a business suit instead of blue jeans, and he labors with a pen instead of a pick. But he has the same end in mind as the 49er of old. He wants to get rich. Further, he wants to get rich at the expense of the dollar. And that means his actions affect you and me and every American.
We have witnessed, I think it's safe to say, a failure of our national economic policies, particularly as they relate to dealing adequately with the balance of payments problem. There has developed all over the world a lack of confidence in paper currencies in general and in the dollar in particular, and individuals, businesses, organizations of all types, including some central banks, are trying to take refuge in gold.
That was Dr. Leslie Peacock, vice president of Crocker Citizens National Bank in California. He spoke this noon at the prestigious Commonwealth Club in San Francisco and was interviewed by NBC correspondent Gene Darcardo.
What is the answer? I know it's not a simple one.
It is very far from being simple. I think one can say that it is unquestionably the gravest economic crisis that we have faced in this country in many decades. There are proposals which are on the table. They apparently have not been acceptable to the central bankers meeting in Basel last week. Whether they are acceptable this weekend, is something else again. They involve, I think, the preferred course for the United States. And whether this is negotiable or not, I'm not altogether sure. But the preferred course for the United States is basically to allow a free market for gold, which is not fed by central banks of major countries, allowing the price to seek its own level, the securing of agreements between major industrial countries that we will use gold only for monetary purposes and only amongst ourselves, and for the U.S. to use its gold stock for purposes of stabilizing exchange rates.
If the trend should continue unabated, what would be the eventual outcome, sir?
The eventual outcome would be that the United States would find it absolutely unable to exercise the leadership role which it has played in the post-war period around the free world. We would have situations approaching Vietnam's in some places. We would be invited out of others, and there would be it would be with great difficulty that most nations of the world could maintain their current prosperity.
You're saying that our prestige and power depends to a large extent on gold.
Not that. I am saying that the ability, that the policing problems of the world in an atmosphere of international financial disorder will grow out of all proportion to the ability of the United States to handle them.
The action raising the discount rate, will that have any big effect on the problem?
No. Not in my judgment. It is much too small an increase to still foreign anxieties that we are prepared to deal with our balance of payments. And having been unwilling over a decade or more to really adopt stiff credit policies in order to secure balance of payments improvement, one really has to have some evidence why all at once we have got religion.
There is talk, and it's talk of economists, about so-called free gold. Would you explain what that means?
Well, free gold would mean that individuals, investors, speculators, industrial users would be free, without restrictions, to go into a market for gold, the price of which is determined, as in the case of other commodities, fluctuating daily as copper or silver or lead, that there would be no restraints on the supply of gold forthcoming from current production, from dishoarding by individuals who have accumulated it earlier, but that central banks, for monetary purposes, would not participate in this market and would continue to use gold at the official price.
You've indicated we've made some mistakes. Are there also outside political manipulations involved?
Well, I think, as I'm about to say to this group, that it pleases us, I believe, to blame our difficulties on French malevolence, or upon Middle East sultans, or on thrifty Asians who hoard gold. And this is really symptomatic of a very serious problem, which the roots of which rests very, very squarely on U.S. international policies.
So what is the main thrust, concisely, in what you're going to be telling this group here today?
The main thrust is that there are no answers which are forthcoming. There are some expedients in the short run which are desirable, and they do involve changes in U.S. gold policy. But there are absolutely no answers whatsoever to international financial problems which can occur independent of U.S. actions to get its balance of payments in order.
That's one economist's view of today, and the question is, how did we get into this dangerous posture to begin with? The story starts back in 1934. The world labored in the trough of a depression. There was no such thing as a stable currency in the world. Trade was impossible because no one knew how much to charge for goods or, indeed, how much to pay. The United States was a sleeping giant, tied down by the chains of gold. Franklin Roosevelt was president. He decided that the United States had to go off the gold standard or die. But in taking the gold backing away from American dollars, he found he had to substitute something else. What he substituted was, in effect, a promise. A full-scale depression, at home and abroad, was met with a number of steps remembered well by author and expert Elliot Janeway, whose book, Economics of Crisis, spells out how we progressed from that point to this. He sums it up this way.
We were tinkering during the last crisis. You remember the banks were closed. And Roosevelt was trying a great many expedients, and he tried something else that worked, along with some gimmickry about gold. And he was a pragmatist, you know. And since the other things worked and we were on our way and out of the crisis and the open the banks and there wasn't another run in the banks, we just left whatever it was we were tinkering with stay there, and it's been there until Vietnam brought it out from under the rug.
The United States promised to buy and sell gold indefinitely for $35 an ounce. It is that promise which 34 years later we are now being asked to keep. The next question is, why now? And the answer is that the world has looked at America's $30 billion deficit, at the adverse balance of payments problem, and at the enormous amount of dollars floating around the world, dollars we must buy on demand, and the world has suffered a crisis of confidence in the United States. The confidence of the past was based on American diplomacy, on our domestic politics, and on a peaceful stalemate in a nuclear age. The stalemate was shattered by the Vietnam War. Elliot Janeway again.
The speculators, joined with by our former ally in Europe, are trying to raise the price of gold,
which would
in order to sell it back to us at a profit. Let's put it this way. What's going on in the markets is a sort of financial equivalent or parallel to what happened up in New Hampshire. It's a vote of confidence in the way Johnson's running this war and failing to make responsible provision for financing it. Senator McCarthy confronted people with an alternative, and they said they'd take him against Johnson. Foreigners are confronted with an alternative. Will you take gold against the dollar? And there's an incentive, a speculative incentive, to make money out of that otherwise easy choice. Will you take gold against Johnson's dollar? That's the way the choice is put. And they're saying, what have we got to lose? The United States is insuring the risk. The United States is saying, we'll always buy the gold back at $35, so it's a can't lose proposition. We are subsidizing the speculators who are speculating against the dollar.
Enter the 49er of 1968. Who is he, this gold gambler? Here is a profile from NBC News correspondent Irving R. Levine in London.
People buy gold for various reasons, out of fear, for security, or to speculate. The speculators, who are the most active in the current situation, believe that the United States will be forced to raise the long-fixed price of gold, and they will make a killing. It can be an expensive form of speculation because it costs more than 7% a year to hold gold. There are commissions to be paid when buying it, fees to be paid to a bank for storing it, and since gold is a sterile investment and produces no interest or dividends, income is lost that would be produced if the money were in something other than gold. Yet, from the speculator's point of view, the risk is well worth it if the price of gold is raised by, say, 25 or 50%. A basic reason for buying gold is fear, and this is better understood by Europeans than by Americans. Some families in Nazi-occupied Europe survived during the war by trading gold coins and jewelry for food. Paper money was worthless. Cigarettes had more value as a currency than did paper money. Europe's biggest hoarders, traditionally, are the French. They have experienced two world wars in a generation and 14 devaluations of the franc since 1914. A franc today is worth only 1/250th of its value in 1914. That kind of thing generates a faith in gold. Gold also has a unique quality. It is, in the words of one British writer, easily washed. Unlike banknotes, gold can swiftly be altered. In a simple crucible, a gold bar can be quickly remelted and all marks of previous ownership eliminated. The secret services of many countries pay off their foreign spies in gold. Government ministers in small, shaky countries know that several gold bars are the best insurance for security in case it is necessary to escape across a border into the night. The present crisis, though, is caused mainly by less cloak and dagger-like activities, by individuals, Arab sheikhs, money speculators, by people who are gambling that the United States can no longer maintain its fixed price for an ounce of gold.
But where does the gold come from? Some years ago, in the midst of another crisis, 10 nations joined the United States to help keep the $35 an ounce price safe. But of those 10 nations, now cut down to only 7, the United States must put up more than half the gold. Every time the world gets jittery and the price of gold threatens to creep up, the 7 nations pour out onto the market enough gold to hold the line. The marketplace is London. Only 5 companies in London do all the dealing. The 5 meet daily in a boardroom of Rothschild's Bank. The atmosphere is decorous. So is the behavior. It sounds like this.
So, gentlemen, we will start at 250 shillings and 9 pence 3 farthings.
Why is this critical market in London and not in New York or Washington? Again, Irving R. Levine.
The world's most important market for the buying and selling of gold is situated in London because, for a long period of history, this city was the center of trade and banking for a vast part of the world. It is a vestige of empire of the days when South Africa and Australia, important gold-producing nations, were British possessions. The mechanism was set up and it continues, although London's role in the world of finance and commerce has diminished. Gold is also traded in Paris, Zurich, Milan, and some other cities, but London is by far the most important market. Nearly 3/4 of the non-communist world's newly mined gold passes over the scales of the London gold market. The market consists of only 5 companies in the so-called city, the financial section of London. Men in blue overalls work in vaults beneath the streets of the city, busily weighing neat piles of gold bars and packing them into wooden boxes for shipment to buyers in various parts of the world. The price for a gold bar weighing 28 pounds is set by representatives of the 5 firms bidding on behalf of buyers and sellers each morning. These bullion dealers ordinarily transact for from 3 to 5 tons of gold a day, but suddenly the demand has increased to 100 and even more tons. And that's what this crisis is all about.
Today, at the request of the United States, that London market was closed. So was the one in Zurich and several others around the world which feed the London market. But not the exchange in Paris. French President Charles de Gaulle apparently does not care what happens to the dollar, even though a weakness in the dollar weakens in turn every currency in the world, including the French franc. He pulled France out of the gold pool. So the Paris market did business as usual, and the price of gold leaped upward. Here is a report from George Lewis, NBC News, Paris.
The central bankers can decide what they want to tomorrow in Washington. The French took their own decision today. They set up the first completely free market in gold to exist in 34 years. There was no government decree, no formal proclamation. But the simple act of allowing the Paris Gold Exchange to open while the other main bullion markets closed down at America's behest may have been the death rattle of the world monetary system most of us have known most of our lives. Permitted to seek its market level, the price of gold here soared to $44 an ounce. It may take more power and ingenuity than the central bankers possess to bring it down again to the hallowed official figure of $35. The French gesture confirmed President de Gaulle intends keeping up his filibuster against the once almighty dollar to the bitter end, and it no longer necessarily looks as though the end will be his. There's a growing confidence here that America's allies in the financial struggle are now only paying lip service to her. It's an open secret, the French say, that the Italians haven't really played an active part in international gold pool operations for several months, and that other members are also dragging their feet, secretly insisting the United States take over the load. France's long-standing Cassandra's role is now being vindicated with a vengeance, according to the View here. The other Europeans are beginning to understand that it would have been wiser to listen to President de Gaulle than to President Johnson. America's failure to live up to its financial commitments will mean a further sharp decline in United States prestige and influence abroad and a consequent rise in the influence of France, the first to warn the Americans of the error of their ways. This, of course, is how the Gaullists see it. Now, as always, their analysis is essentially political. In the long run, France has as much to lose economically from a world financial panic as anybody. But President de Gaulle seems prepared to risk that. He isn't even really interested in the quick profits France, with her $6 billion in gold reserves, stands to make from a rise in the gold price. De Gaulle is out to beat the system, the post-war political system that has, he says, led to an American imperium over the Western world. The monetary scheme, pegged to the dollar, has been one of the chief pillars of that system, possibly its main one. Today, it cracked, and de Gaulle leaned his weight against it to make sure that it can't be repaired.
But shortly after the Paris market closed, de Gaulle softened his position. The French government announced it was ready to cooperate in the international monetary talks in Washington tomorrow. So far, there's been no answer from the gold pool nations, and for good reason. France deserted them months ago. France demands the exclusive use of gold to back world trade. And France has, after the United States, the next largest gold reserve, over $5 billion. But France can't be sure of getting back, at a profit, the gold reserves she was selling today, unless the international market is reopened in London. The meeting in Washington tomorrow may decide to keep the London market closed indefinitely, or it may decide to let it reopen only on government account, not for speculators. That would leave the gold rush in Paris, and it would drain France down. But such a lesson for de Gaulle is the first step to another European depression which would spread. Besides dollars, there is another and a new substitute for gold in the plans of the International Monetary Fund, a group made up of the major trading nations of the world. Those plans were incorporated into a treaty, and it's all explained by James Robinson, NBC State Department correspondent.
For 4 years, members of the International Monetary Fund have had intense discussions involving one of the most intricate of world problems, that of finance, and in this instance, how to establish, in a sense, a new type or form of currency. This would consist of letters of credit backed by international monetary reserves. It will unfetter world trade from being based on particular nations' currencies or gold. The monetary reserves presently consist of gold, the English pound sterling, and the American dollar. These reserves could be placed in precarious state, for the sterling has been devalued, gold production has slackened off, and there is fear there will be restrictions on the outflow of dollars. And what is happening is that while world trade grows about 10% a year, reserves are not keeping pace. So this country and other members of the International Monetary Fund want to set up what is called a reserve asset. Do so in a way that would relate to the needs of trade rather than to the production of gold or the outflow of dollars. At a monetary conference last September in Rio de Janeiro, an agreement was reached to set up a credit or asset reserve. In effect, the plan would work something like this. A businessman here wants to buy $100 worth of French goods. He would go to the International Monetary Reserve for credit or asset, which would provide him with an equivalent claim in French francs. And there would be a 30% repayment on this over an agreed period of years. Finance officials here are enthused over the agreement. They regret its implementation is a year away. It has no parallel in history. It will expand the world's money supply, with countries supplying their own currency against drawing rights or getting assets from the fund. And this will further world trade. Officials contend if in effect today, there wouldn't be the present financial crisis.
None of this would affect the average American. For the present, until Congress takes some action, Americans are going to feel only slightly higher interest charges on loans and time payment plans like mortgages or car buying. The dollar is still the dollar here at home, threatened more by inflation than gold. But what Congress does will affect every American seriously, for it is considering higher taxes or deep slashes in the administration's domestic spending programs and even a limitation on Vietnam spending. A current budget deficit of $20 billion, or even of $8 billion if a surcharge on taxes is approved, plus a Vietnam War costing over $2 billion a month, plus the recent communist victories on the battlefield, have brought all of this upon us. Merrill Muller, NBC News, good night.
You've been listening to The Gold Rush, What It Means to You, a production of NBC News. Producer Albert Bouchard, director Albert Reyes, technical assistance from Warren Hogan, narrator Merrill Muller. Tomorrow morning, NBC News will broadcast live the announcement by Senator Robert Kennedy on whether or not he will run for the presidency. The statement is scheduled for 10 o'clock New York time.